Hi, Marianne, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Yeah, you've gotten some nice rest on your vacation?
No.
You've been running around, haven't
Oh my Lord, it was crazy.
you?
We got like in because my husband's daughter, she's 18, and she went on a trip with two of her girlfriends. So they arrived at the same time that we did. So basically, that first week we were just running around, showing them Holland. So no time for jet lag, no time for no. But it was really good. It was good.
I'm glad to hear
Yeah.
it.
Okay, so I see that Yum is on the call as well, and he's on vacation. Hi, Yum.
Hi there. Thank you. How are you?
Good. Good to have you on the call.
Yeah, I thought I'd try and join in as I managed, which is nice.
Nice.
Keep it kind of fresh. I
And where are you on vacation?
am on my way up to the north of Norway, so
Nice.
right now, yeah, just having my computer so far with me on my cabin, and then moving on tomorrow morning.
Very nice.
Yes.
All right. Well, it's good to have you on the call. And I see that Wyman and Signe Marie have joined us as well. Hi, Wyman.
Hi, Femke. Hi.
Good to have you on the call. How are you
Nice.
doing?
I'm good. Yes, I'm good.
Good. And how about you, Signe Marie?
I am fine as well. How are you? Can you hear me, by the
Yes,
way?
I can hear
Yeah,
you. Yeah.
that's good.
Very
Very
good.
nice.
Okay, so let's start off with questions first. Any questions about coaching or a client that you have?
Was wondering, I don't know if it's, like the right time to do it now, but you had a video post about the me them exercise that you use
Oh,
for,
yeah.
yeah. And I just got curious of, of how you do it, do the exercise. But
Okay.
I don't, yeah, but I don't know if it's, this is like the right time for it though. I mean, if you couldn't explain more about it, how you, because you were basically saying that, you were asking the client, it's like, well, how do you know that you're not a shoe or not the chair that you sit on?
Right.
But the pattern, is that probably, do you have like a literature or somewhere I can find it, the pattern that you want?
Yeah, it is part of the resilience training. Let me see if I have that. Yeah, I don't think I have that here, but it's part of the resilience training, and basically what it is an addition to the self-esteem pattern. So and in a way, like, hold on one second, because my dog is destroying something. Nancy, can you check outside? I think Riley is chewing on Finnegan's toy. So I actually used the pattern last week with one of my clients, and she's really like confusing human being from human doing, and sometimes it's hard to, if you don't separate that out, how do you know that you're not your shoe? And then knowing, okay, let's do that first before we bring acceptance to it. So once we've done that, then it's much easier to bring acceptance to things because it's not who you are as a person. So I incorporate that, or that's what Michael did, incorporated that in the self-esteeming pattern. So basically, you step into where you would step into acceptance, you metastate that acceptance with the metastate of you are not your shoe, so that right. you understand I'm separate from.
So you have like an extra anchor for that, or
it's an extra metastate. So let me kind of like draw that out.
Because when you're stepping into acceptance and appreciation and the awe, then you also have the separating.
So you're applying. Yeah, in a way you are separating, but as a coach, when you go through this pattern, you really have to verbally separate it. Mm-hmm. You know, because you need to kind of, so the way that I do that, so if you start off with acceptance first, you start off with, so accepting all of those things that you have done or said or that happened to you. So you use in your language words that are focused on the human doing. And then with appreciation, I talk about like, so what can you appreciate about yourself as a human doer? So someone who can achieve things, someone who has potentials, who can develop skills, things like that. So you are a human doer. And then with awe, you're a human being. So you in your language, you're already separating those out. But that sometimes is just not enough, because if that is so strongly enmeshed, the like, I am what I do, I am what happened in my past, I am, you know, the things that people said to me, so now that's part of my identity. I've actually had two clients recently who had that really strongly, and where I had to either just do that sense of like, how do you know that you're not your shoe? And just do that, or make it part of the self-esteeming pattern, in which case you kind of metastate it on top of acceptance. So that you basically have like, I don't even know how to call that the not your shoe state.
Me, them?
Me, them, a separateness. Mm-hmm. And it's me, them, but it's also me, that, and, you know, like, because it's also like separating yourself from the things that you say, the things that you do. So if you think about it in that first pattern, or in one of the first patterns that you do, taking ownership, you take ownership of your thoughts, your feelings, your actions, and your words. But with this one, you separate yourself from your thoughts, your feelings, your words, and your actions. That's what you do with not your shoe. Because sometimes we've identified with one part of that so much that it's difficult to bring that acceptance to it. So it's like you're not your emotions. You're so much more than that. You have emotions, but you are not your emotions. And that's what you do with this. And then once they have this, with that, they can step into acceptance. So now that you know that that's not who you are, notice what you can accept about the things that you do, the things that you think, feel, the things like that.
And it is, I think that it can be a hard thing to understand. I've just read, it's only me that I hear there's like a noise.
Yeah, I just muted everyone.
Oh. I've just read an interesting book about self-esteem. Mm-hmm. And her definition of it is, well, she's saying that like self-confidence, like your faith in your ability to do, mm-hmm. is I mean, she doesn't like separate self-esteem and self-confidence. She says that also self-confidence is a part of your self-esteem, your sense of worth, and she's arguing with it that it, you know, self-esteem about feeling that you're having worth in this like world with other people. And so when you're, you know, like what your skills, like what you're good at, is also a part of your identity. And I guess, I mean, and it's true, but still it's important to make that separation. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
yes,
you have the conditioned self-esteem, but still it's like there's positive things about it too, because it's a drive, you know, like having, if I'm afraid to do a mistake, it could be a positive drive, but it could be, it's just like the balance. If it's too much, then it's not good. But if it's a little bit, then it's good.
Yeah. And if it's, but the thing is that, like, because then, you know, like if it's like part of your self-worth, then if you do something really well, then you are great as a person. And if you don't do something so well, then you're not so great as a person. And like, I don't see why there would not be a sense of drive to learn and to grow if it's not connected to your sense of identity or your sense of self-worth. Mm. And I think those would even be different. Your sense of self-worth and having that be unconditional is different from what you allow in as part of your identity. Because I think those are, if you have like an unconditional self-worth and then you welcome in, oh, like, well, this is you know, what I'm really good at. And as such, that becomes like part of how I know my and understand myself. That doesn't have to take away the fact that you're, even though in some areas then you are not really good, or when you're starting to learn something new, you suck at it, that's all fine. Mm-hmm. And you can gradually welcome that in as part of how you know yourself and what you know you can do.
Yeah.
So I think there's that difference as well. It's like what's part of your identity, and that's separate from your worth as a human being.
Right.
And it's not something that we learn in school, because we get like rewards, you know, like especially here in the US, it's like, oh, you get a reward for not, you know, never having missed a day of school, or not having sick days, or like being really great at math. And yeah, it's, those things are nice, but they also create a lot of problem for people.
Mm. Yeah, I follow you on that. It's and I guess it's just in the self-esteem pattern, you kind of have both. I mean, you make the coachee can see what they accept and appreciate also about what they're doing, but at the same time see that their self-worth is, you know, like separate from that. But it's, I don't know, I'm just trying to like understand, because then you're separating it, but you're also appreciating what you're doing, right? Like what you're,
yeah, you're appreciating all like the fact that you can achieve all these things with your powers.
Mm-hmm.
You're appreciating that, hey, like I have all these skills, they're unique to me. I have all these potentials that I can further develop, and I can really appreciate that in myself. Mm-hmm. But still, that doesn't say anything about my self-worth as a human No. being, because I don't have to do anything for that.
Mm.
You know, like if all of a sudden you get paralyzed and you can't really do anything, does that mean you're less less than.
Right.
And that a lot of the time that's really tough for people because they, especially like.
Yeah. And then they really would have, I mean, most, I guess most of us would have to then, you know, do a lot of self-esteem work, just being aware, becoming aware of that. And also work on your like new identity, because then a part of your identity changes, you know, when you can't do what you used to do.
Yeah. And that's
but still keeping the self-worth, but then in a way, like, you know, working with the self-worth and then finding, I don't know, a new meaning or a new identity, which is a progress, process, I guess.
Absolutely. And that's what I get that quite a lot is like, oh, but when I let that go, then who am I? Then, you know, because I've always had these thoughts and even though they're negative and they're not serving me, it's been who I am.
Yeah.
And that in itself can be scary for people to kind of like sit with that. But then I just like go like, okay, what can you accept about that? What can you appreciate about that?
Right.
And then build a new identity around like the fact that they also have potentials and dreams. And so, yeah, that it's a shift. It's a definite shift in thinking and mindset, and it really has an effect on how people view themselves. But like this client of mine, she's been wanting to set up her own business, and she's been procrastinating, which is what I've noticed a lot of coaches do, and also just anyone really who wants to set up their own business. Because they have to be perfect and they don't know, like if they make a mistake and then what comes in is because their self-esteem is unconditional. It's really related to what other people think of them. And that's what, when I work with You Are Not Your Shoe. So the other day with this client, we worked on, so like what other people think about you, that's not you. So we had to separate, we had to add that in here as well. Like what they've said in the past and bringing that into your identities doesn't say anything about who you are as a person. And that was such a huge mind opener. Like that, like she actually teared up just realizing that, that she didn't have to take that on. And that, and it's made a huge shift in what she can do and taking action and things like that.
Right.
So.
Interesting. That's very, I think that's like you say, it's, I mean, the self-esteem, it's just a topic that comes up and comes up and comes up.
You know, like self-esteem, external reference. I would say that, you know, 80% of the time, that's part of what you need to work with, possibly even more.
Right.
And this one, the Not Your Shoe, that also helps with getting rid of the external. So like, how do you know that you're not your chair? How do you know that you're not your shoe? So the state that you really want is to be able to separate that sense of like, I know that I'm not the things, you know, I'm no, like I can pick up my phone, but I know that it's not me. And like, I can put it down and leave it behind. And so in doing that, and I, sometimes I just take several objects and then taking that feeling to, you know, sometimes a statement that someone has said to my client in the past. I had a client whose parents never said, I love you. And so he had drawn the conclusion, I'm not lovable, from that. So then I said to him, like, okay, so like, how do you know that you're not your shoe and this chair that you're sitting on? And I said, so now that you realize, well, now that you have this awareness, how much do you realize that you're not what your parents did or did not say in the past? And it was just like, it blew his mind. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very simple process, because you don't necessarily have to go through all of this, the acceptance and appreciation and awe. So you can do that as a standalone, and then it's really powerful to kind of loosen up the external referencing.
Right.
Yeah. Did that help?
Yes, a lot. Thank you.
Nice. You're welcome. Any other questions? I actually had an interesting question, like, from Lenka the other day. Let me see if I can find it. Yes. So she has a client, and he has problems with being alone. And they worked out in the coaching session that it came from his childhood. But he has a long distance relationship, and his wife lives far away from where he lives, and she agreed to move to where he wants to be. But she is kind of postponing and then canceling coming to live with him. And so he, as a result, has trust issues and doesn't know where his future will be and whether she's really going to come join him at some point. Like they agreed upon. So she said, like, I find it difficult to coach, as it seems a lot depending on trusting the other person. And so this kind of like gets a little bit into the realm of couples counseling. And just recently I had a couple approach me, and they said, oh, I want to be coached. We want to be coached by you. And they were kind of both blaming each other, and there was a lot of dependency on one another on what, like, oh, if he does this, then I can do this. Or if she does this, then I can do this. And I referred them on to a therapist, because then, like, it's very tricky to, like, it's very easy to get sucked into their games. And marital counselors are much better equipped to deal with that kind of dynamic. However, in this case, like, with coaching someone who is, like, cannot trust the other person, it really comes down to, like, boundary work. So he obviously wants to trust her, but there's like not really a lot of proof that from what we have heard so far, of course, I don't know the entire story, that he can trust her. And so trust is something like, if your client says, oh, I lack trust and I want to move towards trust, that might not be the most, the most ecological state to work on, because if the environment tells him you should, like, that you cannot trust, then there might need to be acceptance of that so that he can take that for a reality, or how much longer does he want to wait for her? So then towards trust, if that makes sense. So that's something that I would, like, when you do have a client who, when it's about relationship issues, consider referring them on to someone who is and experienced in relationships. And in these cases, like if someone, I just recently had a client as well, and she's been in a relationship for 25 years. She's always kind of like been fighting for her to be heard, fighting for her needs to be met. And he just would not meet them in the way that she had expected. And so there was a lot of disappointment, but then she would kind of like numb that disappointment so that she could continue with the relationship. And therefore, completely losing herself and getting into a strong depression. So what I worked on with her was, you know, like for her to come from her own power and to set boundaries and to make sure that her own needs are met and to set limits on what behavior she accepts or how she accepts to be treated, which actually resulted in a change in dynamic in the relationship. So you can work on that aspect, but it's not to say that the other person is going to change. Because that's something that, like, if that, then they would need to go into couples therapy or couples counseling. So I thought that was a great question. And I think it's an important distinction to make if you're not comfortable with dealing with relationship to refer them on. So any other questions?
It's Sigma, and I have just a comment for the topic you just discussed.
Yes.
Have you read the book Seven Habits of Highly Efficient People?
Yes.
By Stephen Covey, because mm-hmm. he talks about the maturity levels where it's kind of where you are the lowest level, where you are dependent, like kids are, they need help to be dressed, they need help for making food to them. Mm-hmm. It's, in relationships, it's like you are dependent on the other person to feel well yourself. You are right. In the relationship, it's kind of up to him. If I feel good, he doesn't see me, and then I feel bad or whatever. And it's kind of to come up to the next level of maturity, which is independence, where right. you self take care of, kind of, or at least work with the self esteem yourself and making sure you tell yourself that you are a good person and give yourself this response. And then the next maturity level, when both are independence, they can be interdependent, where right. they kind of use, and he has this metaphor of the emotional bank account, which I just loved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
where you put, think of a bank account where you put, kind of, is this a withdrawal or is it you put into the emotional yeah. bank out or withdraw out?
Deposit.
Deposit, exactly. And I just love that metaphor because if you think of it that way, it's kind of a lot up to you to kind of put thing into the emotional bank account for the other person without expecting necessarily to have something back. But as more as you have put something into the emotional bank account, the more the relation also will tolerate of things when you're not on top of yourself. So I just, that metaphor just struck me as kind of something good to bring into coaching.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is that, well, one thing that I think is lacking from that work is how to make that practical for people. What is it that you do or that you need to do in order to kind of like be independent first and then yeah. be interdependent, which I think is like, that's what we do with working on self-esteem and exactly. taking control of our own powers and then yes. setting boundaries of responsibility 2 and 4.
Exactly.
And then, of course, we also, what comes into play with that is also expectations. So a lot of the root time when someone has really high expectations, they're setting themselves up for frustrations. But at the same time, it's not the case of like, well, then I just don't have any expectations anymore, because there are certain values or certain things that you want in a relationship or that you want to experience in a relationship. And so what comes into play there is like, what is for me a non-negotiable?
You know, exactly.
If this is not being met in a relationship, do I have the, like, my husband and I go to couples counseling, like just regularly, because I like it partly, but also to kind of like refine, because I think it's always good to get an outside opinion. And our therapist always talks about having a willingness to divorce. And I think a lot of people, when they struggle in relationships and even in organizations, you know, like there's not that willingness to divorce, because they're so afraid of losing the relationship or of losing the job that they consistently cross their own boundaries or let others cross their own boundaries for the sake of keeping the relationship or for the sake of keeping the job. And so it's that kind of like tension between the job or the relationship and my sense of self, which is interesting.
That is a very interesting aspect. I would kind of think a little bit opposite, is kind of the willingness to just say, okay, I want to stay in this relationship and want to make the best kind of possible kind of, it just reminds me on several years ago, where I just decided I am not the one to go. So I told my husband, I will stay, whatever it is, just tell me what I can do to make everything good. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a very different approach than kind of, okay, we are both willing, the willingness to divorce is kind of a little bit strange for me, if you shall build up on that.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is that the willingness to divorce allows you to set a boundary, to say, like, this is something so important, I'm going to go get it. And what that does is that it actually creates, like, enough heat for the other person to grow and to decide to grow. So the whole idea of having a willingness to divorce is so that you never have to divorce, paradoxically.
Okay.
That's
okay.
The whole idea behind it. But if you want, I can send you some reading material on it.
Yes, please.
I think then that it what happens when you have the willingness to divorce, that's when you don't become so dependent.
Right, you know? Exactly.
So it's a way to become independent.
Yes. That's true.
Exactly.
That's, reasonably.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's scary. That, like, then it becomes scary for both, because what that does is also it allows you to kind of feel in your body what's really important.
Yes. What do you really want to achieve in life or work with, or
exactly,
which again builds self-esteem.
Yes. And it does really come back to that as well. Jane?
Hi.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. I find the discussion very interesting, and I'm thinking about it's important to be able to build autonomy. Self-autonomy first, before being able to experience interdependency in good condition.
Yeah.
Otherwise, interdependency is like hiding. We'll be hiding a part of us which will be might be I'm afraid of being myself. I'm afraid of being alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and then it's not really interdependency.
No, it is not actually. So before being able to really experience in the good condition interdependency, it's very important to be able to face oneself and to accept who we are, be it is positive or negative or difficult moment, but it is who we are, actually. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And talking about self-esteem, self-confidence of self, or assertiveness, I mean, it's always somewhere in the discussion somewhere, you know. Some people do things because they have self-esteem to do that thing, and they might not be able to do something else because they are lacking self-esteem in that field. So it's not something we gain one for all. It's always to be built and to be working on lifelong. That is my opinion.
It's dynamic.
Dynamic. It's like a systemic movement that is not finished one for all. There is always something to improve according to the context, the people we are meeting, the goal we are setting, and so on.
Yeah, definitely. And so, you know, like self-esteem absolutely plays a role in this. And there's like more to it. And so when you do like coaching on someone on a topic like this, it is about like what expectations does someone have of relationships? Like this, one of my clients, and I was going through the notes actually yesterday, she said, well, I always grew up with the notion that the man takes the initiative. The man is always the leader. And so she then, and I have to think about what she actually said, but she then went to, because her partner did not take the initiative, then she would have to take the initiative, but then she would kind of like fight with him, you know, to kind of nag him to take the initiative, which meant that he would withdraw even further. And so it didn't work. But then she drew the conclusion, well, if all men are like this, then I don't need them. So then she's overgeneralizing. So she already has an expectation of this is how they're supposed to be. Well, then if you meet a partner who doesn't meet that, then creates a disappointment, but doesn't mean that that person is not being loving, or, but it's just like that you hold on to an expectation that may not be so realistic. So yes, it can have to do with self-esteem. It can also have to do with your expectations of what a relationship should be like. You know, it could be totally based on fairy tales and romantic movies that you've seen, which also happens a lot. You know, we like, that's how, what we are fed into. And so we get all these expectations of, oh, this is what this person should do for me. So it can also be that it's not always the case that it's, you know, self-esteem is the most important thing to work on. It can also be, making the expectations more realistic, and therefore like loosening them up and therefore being able to connect more.
Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about expectation, could we make the link with the beliefs? Mm-hmm. Because having expectation or too much expectation, because maybe my mother used to do this way or my father used to do this way, is also have something to do with beliefs. We inherited from people around us, for our parents, for example, or other people who were very close to us at where we were a child. And then it becomes dealing with our beliefs or the person's beliefs.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember my mom always said, well, there's only two types of men. They are, you've got the sleazeballs or you've got the pussies. And so I was like, okay, so that's my two choices. I can either get a sleazeball or like a wuss. So like years ago, I had to work with that belief, even though I kind of wanted to reject it. It had been said so many times that it was kind of still, you know, like infecting me, if you will. So it's definitely a belief, because our beliefs determine what we are going to expect.
Yeah.
So it's just one realm of the, you know, like if we think about the diamond of consciousness, it's just one realm, expectations, and we've got wishes or beliefs or understandings, conclusions, all of those are like part of the same. So is there any other topic, since we're kind of like, since we've dived into that today, any other topic or, you know, maybe in business or someone starting their own business? Like, what are some of the topics that you would like to like flesh out the structure a bit more, so that you know, hey, what is it that I need to listen for in these kinds of situations?
Are you now asking about something to be coached at, or just something that we're thinking about? Like,
no, just something, because it's already getting like, yeah, kind of like late into the call. Right. So I'm thinking maybe we can just talk a little bit more about different structures. So like when I talk about detection and analysis, usually, like we said, you know, there's only a couple of things that really stand out. Self-esteem. I think if you really understand the structure of self-esteem and know how to change that with your client, you already have like a huge advantage over other coaches who don't know how to do that, because it comes up so often and for so many people. And I would say that that's across the board. It doesn't matter if it's in relationships, if it is in business, changing careers, going after some other form of dream. A lot of that has to do with self-esteem and external referencing. But there's other things that come up as well. So like in the field that you are in, what is something that you, that would be really helpful to kind of like look closer at the structure?
I might have a situation that kept me awake tonight or
okay night,
because I've next week I'm going to or the two next week, first a facilitation 2 days in Stavanger, mm-hmm, and then a management group in the Czech Republic, and it's kind of I got the jobs just before summer, and it was, and I agreed the hourly rate, and I thought it was kind of quite clear, and it was they coming to me wanting this, and I've had several meetings, it's two different managers that hired me, but mm-hmm, they are in the same company, and then I've prepared kind of the schedule for the workshops, and I have prepared the details, and I've been sent regularly my hours. And then one of them came back from holiday, and then I got a message that was kind of, this is too much, this is silly, or something like that. It was not the wording, but it was like how I interpreted it. It was kind of, So then I was awake all the night just because of, okay, what happened? Maybe I should make the price. It's the traditional one, and I know it so well that it's kind of, no, it's gross. I say to myself that everything is okay and I will meet them Monday, just relax. But then I still have this picture in my mind that I have, maybe I have priced myself out, or what is it? What can I do?
Okay.
Isn't this just the typical pattern?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, you know, and that one is, you know, for us coaches,
yes,
is a really challenging one that I think across the board, not just coaches, but anyone who's self-employed, like that fear of, am I charging too much?
Yes.
And like, just yesterday I was watching a video from someone, like I'm in her group, and she did a video on when someone takes out the calculator and like determines how much you're going to be, and they start to kind of like backtrack, or they don't want to work with you because they don't have the money. And her premise was that if it's important enough for that person, they will come up with the money.
Yes.
I agree to that. I agree with that to some extent. Sometimes someone, and you know, I work with individuals, the money is just not there. And in organizations, sometimes they are dependent on getting the budget, you know, like things like that. So you do need to be aware if in organizations of like, is the budget there? But my, like, if you have sold to other people before at that price, then I wouldn't worry so much about pricing yourself out of the market. And then the question is more like, what is the worry that is behind that? Because a lot of the time we start prophesying.
Yes, that's true.
And like, oh my God, no one is ever going to buy my products ever again.
Exactly. But yeah. I realized before earlier experience as well is kind of a lot of people think that facilitation or good facilitators, they can just pop in and do it without preparation. Sometimes I have experienced people like, oh, do you really need to prepare? It's kind of, but of course it's a lot of preparation that makes it that good. So I'm not sure what is the case now. And I looked at it again, and it might be that I also said something for, it's a lot of travel here.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some fee for travel. Maybe it was that he didn't like. I'm not sure. I just need to be open-minded and meet them Monday and find out. And I guess it's not bad. It's just that I am making it kind of a big thing in my head.
Mm-hmm.
I guess.
So how are you making it a big thing in your head? If we just kind of unravel that, because I'm like, if we unravel that, then we can check in with the others to see if they also recognize the structure of that thinking. So
yeah,
if you don't mind, I'm just gonna like then write it down,
yeah,
as well, so sure, that people can follow along. But like, so this person, he sent you an email, right?
Yeah.
And what was it specifically that had you kind of like, that triggered you to stay awake at night? When did that start?
It started when he, it was, let me see, it was just, isn't this adding up to a little bit or too much or something? It was kind of, here we need to talk about the price, this is adding up to be too much or something, he said.
Okay.
So
that triggered you.
Yeah.
Where did your mind go? So you read that? Were you behind your computer? Were you reading it on your phone?
On my iPhone.
Okay.
So we need to, and he just said that we need to discuss on Monday. So we will do that. But still, my mind goes to what? Because we had agreed the hourly rate, he has been with me in the meetings, preparation meetings, and I have gone through it with him, and I made the slides he requested, and yeah. So it's just that I next time need to kind of be even more clear, I think. So my mind's go to analyzing what...
Okay.
Exactly, does he mean, is it because I added the travel cost? Is it because he expected every preparation to be included in the hourly rate for the work? What is it?
So okay.
Analyzing and being a little bit kind of, yeah, trying to find out.
What is behind the analyzing?
What fear, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because I want to I want them to use me again and have this build this good relationship with my new
one
of the first customers.
Okay.
So
is the fear driving the analyzing?
I guess so. Mm-hmm. A fear of maybe they think I'm not worth it, or if they think this is outside what we agreed, or I'm just being very unsure. What mm-hmm. does he really mean?
Yeah. And so I'm hearing that ultimately there's a fear of loss.
Yeah. Not loss of this, but loss of the relationship, I guess. Loss of a very good customer that I really love to work with.
Okay. So.
I am willing to do a lot with the price is that the big issue. It's just that I need to find out what it is.
Yeah.
Am
I understanding you correctly that when you read this email and you saw, isn't this adding up to be too much, that something happened in your mind that caused this fear of loss?
Yep.
Which then had you to start analyzing, like, is it because of the travel cost? Is it because... the preparation that he expected, that the preparation was inside of the what you had
work cost.
The work cost. So you start doing the analyzing.
Yeah.
But there's something behind, there's something that, like, thoughts and beliefs in the back of your mind that have driven that fear of loss as a result of this trigger, and now you're trying to analyze. My guess is, but I might be wrong, is to kind of abate that fear, to get rid of that fear, to manage it.
Yeah. I guess it's also in combination with my sleeping pattern that I have discussed with some of you mm-hmm. before that I'm the thoughts are just I'm not very good falling asleep
right.
all the thinking is coming. So
yes. And that I remember when we were talking about that, that part of that also had to do with control.
Yeah. Being in control. Yes.
Being in control. And this, now you're unsure, seems like you're not in control. And it seems like this analyzing is a way of getting back control.
Yep.
Is that correct?
Sounds correct.
And is that working?
No.
No.
And I will not fall asleep.
No, exactly. So just, and we can kind of like explore this a little bit more, but I'm really curious first, what is it that you would want to feel as you, like, in relation to this upcoming meeting, and like, isn't this adding up to be too much, so that you can show up on Monday in exactly the way that you want? What would that be like?
Confident, just sure about this is adding so much value that it's fully worth it. It's kind of the real feeling of confidence would be great to have.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit what that would feel like. I'm sure you've had that before.
Yes. I would feel calm, trusting in myself, have a lot of humor and focus on the task ahead and not being worried at all about this little price issue. It's kind of just something behind me that is kind of solved and not really any discussion.
And so I'm hearing that. What just happened?
I realized that I wished I just had agreed a package price and was had this turned out this discussion once and for all, just to focus on the fun part. No kind of worries at all. It's just a task at hand that I love to do.
Yeah. So you have confidence that this adds value, trusting yourself. So there is calm and humor and focus on the task ahead. And the prize, this little prize thing, is behind you.
Yes.
Right?
And when 25 people are together in 2 days, it's kind of so important that they have 2 efficient, good days. That it's kind of, no doubt, it's a good value for them.
Right.
So, no question. That is the feeling I want to have.
Right. Very good. And you talk about like that it's like the price issue is little in comparison to before, and how you responded to like that email. How much smaller is it than what you had made it before?
Much smaller, because in kind of in the wanted situation, it's sorted out. It's no discussion. We can focus on the relationship and all the good things. I work with managers on the kind of what's important and not on the details on what they should pay me. But then the learning is, of course, that it might be so important to sort that really out up front, not only the hourly rate.
Right. So what I'm hearing is that one of the steps, not just for now, but for in the future, one of the steps for you is to go to package deals.
Yes.
Okay. So that's one of the steps that will get you to have more of the focus on the task ahead and not to deal with the details of the pricing so much.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And so something else here, it sounds like you're making, in the fear of loss, like you're making the money really big, whereas when you're confident that this adds value, it's a lot smaller.
Yeah, I think it's related to the kind of very good relationship I have made with that manager, that I feel that is kind of, is this threatening the relationship? What is it now?
Okay.
What are they discussing this when I'm not there? What do they say? It's kind of because I had a very, very good relationship with both of the managers I'm going to work with.
Okay. So you go from getting an email, isn't this adding up to be too much, to threatening the relationship? You're kind of thinking, what are they discussing when I'm not there?
Yeah.
And like, where does your mind go then? What do you believe about that creates this fear of loss?
What I think about that is, if they, for example, had a totally different view of what the hourly rate we agreed. I think I'm making it up in my mind, all these alternatives. I think it should be pretty well, kind of, but it's kind of, I'm scared that they now say this is becoming far too expensive, we can't use her anymore or whatever. But still, I have had Skype meetings with both of them during summer, where we have focused on the workshop planning.
Mm-hmm.
They know how much we have worked on kind of the topic in there, and the structure, and how to engage, and so.
And but here's the thing. Your mind seems to go to from just getting an email, isn't this adding up to be too much? We need to discuss this on Monday.
Yeah.
Your mind goes to, is this threatening the relationship? Or what are they discussing when I'm not there? This is,
do they like me?
Do they like me? Yes. That's what I was like kind of intuiting. It's like, this is about who you are, not about the pricing so much anymore.
Yeah. I see. I realize that.
Yeah. And so what I'm hearing that you're doing is that you are making it about, you're personalizing it, making it about you.
Yeah.
And then you're prophesying, or like you're interpreting, mind reading, rather, of what they are thinking and what they are discussing, and making that up. And then thinking that it's going to affect the relationship, so you're prophesying, which then results into the fear of loss, and then you start to kind of like try to control that fear by analyzing, which is not working.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's how you're making this price thing bigger than it really is. Would that be correct?
Yes, I am sure. I guess I at least hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So that may be one way that they're thinking. But this is like kind of a big leap, isn't it? Isn't it adding up to be too much? We will discuss this on Monday too. Oh, they might not like me.
Yeah. It's unrealistic. So I think I'll just go back to the good feeling I had with the relationship when we have planned the workshops, and everything is kind of, they will be so fun workshops to run. So if I can just focus on the task and not be disturbed about the pricing thing.
Mm-hmm. So we know that there's personalizing, there's some mind reading.
Yeah.
And then also prophesying.
Yeah.
In this, if like, you know, like when you're talking about this new way of doing things, and feeling confident that this adds value, in leading up to Monday,
yeah,
and then going into that meeting on Monday and to having that discussion, you want to feel confident that it adds value and to focus on that value.
Yes, that's what I want.
Yeah, so if you're able to have that trust in yourself and be confident that it adds value and focus on the task ahead and go into the pricing discussion with this on Monday, how will that be different?
How would that be different? That would be kind of, I would be much more relaxed and not worried. I will just skip that part and just be curious. Okay, what did you mean? What's the issue here? And solve it when it comes up.
Okay.
And just find out on Monday what it is.
Yeah. So you can.
Or I could take a photo.
Signa Maria, are you still there?
Me?
No, I could. You dropped out for a little while. Yeah. So might have been my connection.
No, I'm back. No, I can hear you as well.
Okay. So you said I could be like, you know, when I have this confidence that it adds value and focus on the task, then you can be relaxed and curious about the issue and ask questions about that, or you can pick up the phone.
Yes. I wonder if maybe I should do that, pick up the phone tomorrow and just ask.
Yeah.
To find out.
Yeah.
So,
if you can do this and focus on the task ahead, how do you then feel about your price?
It's kind of just okay. And I can be flexible as well. If it's our budget, I can also be flexible. So I'm quite relaxed.
Okay, so like for you, the price is okay, and I can be flexible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you need to believe about, isn't this adding up to be too much, that allows you to be confident that this adds value?
Yeah.
And have trust in yourself?
Yeah.
What do you need to believe about that?
I need to believe really that this, not only that, I need to, Did you ask what I need to know, or for myself or for them?
Yourself, like, because now you are personalizing it, you're making it about who you are, you're drawing conclusions about what they are thinking.
Yeah.
So if you're not doing all of that, but you're like, it's just the question, isn't this adding up to be too much? What can you believe about that question that allows you to stay focused on the task ahead and be confident that this adds value?
I need to just believe that it's not adding up to too much, but, and it's like I thought we had agreed, and that if he has some issues, he will explain to me honestly, and then we will find a solution, and it will not be a problem. That's instead of worrying about the full relationship, etc. It's much more important with the relationship here, I think, than the price issue.
Right, exactly.
And it's big tasks anyway. The two.
The thing is that you're bringing it into the relationship.
Yeah.
Right. So if this is not about the relationship, what is it about that allows you to be confident that this adds value?
I'm not sure I really understand how to answer that one. Because it struck me that this, if I see this as not being part of the relationship, the price issue, then I can really focus on the workshop and the topic there, and how to make those workshops the best workshops ever with the outcome they need and want. So and that to separate those two, I think. Yeah, just to separate the task and task ahead from the price issue, and not mix it up with a relationship thing, because they have really hired me and trust me to do these important workshops for them. So it should actually be very okay with the relationship. Just something he had on his mind regarding the price thing.
Yeah.
And I will look out. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just something about the price, and he will explain that to you what the issue is, so that you can find a solution.
Yeah, exactly.
So how does that, when you think and feel in that way about it,
but then it's not threatening the relationship anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. Then it can maybe build relationship, because I listen to him and check out what the issue is and learn more about them.
Yeah.
And be even more, show up to be even more flexible than he believed. So maybe then strengthen the relationship instead.
Okay. And if you think about it in those terms, does that allow you to feel confident and focus on the task ahead and on the relationship?
Yes, absolutely. Then I can just use it as an opportunity to really show who I am and how flexible I am and listen to them and their needs. So be open, open-minded. Yeah.
Very nice. Well, thank you, Signe-Marie, for sharing.
Thank you.
With this.
That was a full coaching session.
Well, a little bit. If we had more time, I would probably also dive into, okay, so let's say that you lose the relationship.
Yeah.
Let's say that that's true. Where does your mind go then? Because that is a possibility. It doesn't sound likely at all, but it is a possibility, and it doesn't have to create a fear, you know? So I think also, like, for the ones who are listening in, like, sometimes, like, you know, it makes sense. Like, we have a fear of loss, but we don't have to have that fear of loss. So what we haven't uncovered yet is, what are your true beliefs about loss and losing the relationship that make you feel afraid? Because then we really get to kind of like the core. So we've got some good insights here, but figuring out what is this fear of loss about would probably give you even more freedom.
Yes.
That might be something to explore.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So for the others, are there any questions?
I just have a comment. The fear of loss. It can, you know, since the prior discussion we had about the fear of divorce, you know. So, I mean, like working on the fear of loss, like you say, it will make, it will create independence. And
yes,
and like freedom, feeling, making you feel free in also the negotiations, you know, like the, really listening to what are my needs, what are my boundaries, what are my price, what are my, yes, what are my services worth?
Exactly. Yes. And I can be flexible, but to a certain extent, I'm not going to give my product away.
Right. And yeah, defining that boundary, like I can be flexible, but how flexible?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And now if there's too much of a fear of loss, it's more likely to that you're going to give too much away if the relationship is so important. And that sometimes that for the long term, that might be a good thing. But just to give you an example, like my husband has done that on several occasions. He's amazing at copywriting, and there's this one agency here in town that always lowballs him, and he has set it up in a way that that's how their relationship is, and he doesn't like it, but he also doesn't change it. Because he feels he needs the feels that he needs the job.
Yeah.
But if we really do have that confidence that it adds value, and we don't have that fear of loss because there's always something else that we can get, then there's a lot more freedom to also know, you know what, I do provide this value. Here's the package deal. And we can, there's a little bit of wiggle room, but, I'm not going to undercut myself.
Yeah. That's, I need to prepare that as well before I.
Yeah. And so like, maybe if you can have a conversation with someone about like, okay, what drives this fear of loss?
And
so that you can have a different, so let's say if you lost or the prospect of losing, instead of feeling fear about it, how do you want to feel instead?
Just like a learning experience.
So it's a learning experience. So that's something to think about.
But I'm kind of, I'm so confident now that the work fine. So maybe discuss the price after the workshops.
Yeah. Oh, I hate this price. Some people do that.
That could be. Because we have this hourly rate agreement already. So,
You know, there's also the idea of like you know, like being able to show your client what it is going to, the value, like, you know, let them see the value, paint that picture, paint the possibility.
Yes.
And then connect that to the price.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Yeah. So any other questions or comments?
Yeah, I was just going to add the fear of loss. I was going to ask, is that permanent? Could you have loss in inverted commas on this occasion? But as Femke said, then once they see the value, then you can have more bargaining power on the next occasion.
Yes, absolutely.
And Femke, I wanted to ask, so if you were to design a coaching program for Signe Marie, you would have another session to really flush out this fear of loss, and then what else would you be thinking of?
Well, I'm not sure yet, because of course, because I know Signe Marie from the training, and so like I already knew some of her patterns, which made it easier to kind of know, yeah, okay, part of that. I'd be curious what is behind the fear of loss, because if we figured that out, I think, you know, this like short term, this is going to be, I think, really helpful for her for Monday. I think that, you know, having a package deal, separating the price and relationship, I know that there's a little bit of confusing what she does with who she is, because she's doing that personalizing, and that might contribute to the fear of loss. But I don't really know, like let's really go there. If you were to lose this, what's the worst thing that can happen that she now sees that makes her feel afraid of it? So like, because then, you know, that might be that she's really taking it personal, then I am not a likable person, or no one will like me, or, you know, I don't know what's behind that. There might be reference experiences that come up. So that would be the first thing that we need to do. Like if I were to finish the coaching session, is to really go there. So that we have some more information. And then I would set that up as like, okay, so we need to work maybe on personalizing. There might be reference experiences that are getting in the way, but it might also be that the physical experience of maybe loss, that the physical experience of loss, that she's not comfortable with that. And so that maybe that we just need to kind of reset her relationship with what happens in her body. But I don't know that. I don't know what's going to make that shift yet.
When you say physical experience of loss, is this in relation to her lack?
Oh, sorry, I'm losing you.
Physical experience of loss, are you referring to her not sleeping well?
That might be, might be related to that. If there's something in your body, like, you know, for example, if we have like if some form of anxiety comes up, which a lot, like my guess is with loss comes anxiety a little bit, you know, like it's a it's a natural response. Doesn't have to be like a very strong, but at least something happens in our body when we feel loss. So and we can have a really bad relationship with what happens in our body that we want to control, start controlling that.
Hello I think you dropped out for a moment. I don't know whether it's me.
Yeah, I don't know. It might be me. I've been having the last couple of days, I've been having troubles with my internet. So
okay.
Yeah. You can hear me now, okay?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So what I was saying is that with loss inevitably comes like some form of physical response. You yes. know, like just, I think it's just our reptile brain that responds okay. to that. And okay. A lot of the time we don't like that feeling. So we want to control it.
Okay.
So that might be where we need to focus on, but it might also be something else. But it's like we need to kind of dive deeper into that and see, okay, what is it? Because it might also be reference experience that she's had, personalizing. I don't know.
Okay.
But this is a very common response to pricing issues.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, like, and what happens, like, and that's what I did a lot in the past is like, even beforehand, I'm already starting to negotiate with myself and I'm already lowering the price. Before I even know what the other person is thinking, because I'm taking that on. I'm doing a lot of mind reading. And so I think with pricing, a lot of mind reading is going on as well. Mm. Yeah. All right. Well, I hope that today was useful for you. We've come to the end of our session today. I will be posting this online so that you can listen to it again. Signe Marie, let us know on Monday how things have gone and what stage you were in.
Yes, I will.
Sounds good.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. And Jan Evan, have a nice holiday. I hope you have a good time in the north of Norway. You're welcome, and we will speak again 2 weeks from now.
Awesome.
Thank you. Thanks.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.